As promised in this podcast, what I'm going to talk about are some ways to maximize one's engagement in the therapeutic process once one has found one's identified therapist of choice, so that you too can be floating, as in the Blind Faith song, in one's own sea of joy. Yeah, I know it's corny, but what do you expect from a guy that makes horrible jokes, right? So, other podcasts I have done have talked about how to find a therapist, how to pick one, what to look for, what to look out for, that sort of thing. So I thought in this podcast I'd talk about some do's and don'ts, some advice as to how you might decide to maximize your time once you've decided to engage in a therapeutic relationship with someone. Obviously, it's an important choice, and so the choosing is really important, and I talked about some earlier methods as ways to screen one's potential choices and what sort of things to look for and what sort of things to look out for. Talked about the importance of doing having a psychology person or a social work person or a counseling person or psychiatry or whatever kind of therapist or counselor you choose to be one that matches up really well with your personality, one that has expertise in your area or areas of concern, whether they be, trichotillomania, which is the hair pulling out stuff, or whether it's some form of addictive compulsive behavior or attention deficits or depression or whatever. Make good use of your money, whether it's your money or the insurance company's money, and pick somebody who is really wise in his or her own arena that matches the arena that you need, as well as training and experience in that area, and one that you just mesh well with, as I talked about. And if it means going outside of your, network, quote unquote, if you're using a managed care company. Actually, I was right the first time. I've already pontificated about my position on so-called pigs to the public hog trough, so I won't belabor the point again, but I'll say this, that, I don't have insurance. I don't, and that way I can pay out of pocket for whomever I want to do whatever I need, whether it's dental care or eye care or therapy or whatever. So what I tell people is those folks who have insurance and want to use it, that's great, but make sure that it's money well spent. Better to go out of your network and to come out of your own pocket than to get somebody that your insurance company pays for that's a schlepper who, A, doesn't know what he or she's talking about, or who promises they can cure you in 8 or 10 sessions, because frankly that's hogwash in 99% of the conditions, particularly if you have something really convoluted and complicated. And most disorders are, honestly. Very few things are simple. And, if you're one of those folks with a simple situation that you've caught early and attended to early, then you are in the minority, and bully for you, and I'm really proud of you. But that's definitely not the norm. Particularly the folks I see have multiplicity of issues, and they could not be handled except by anyone who was an expert in his or her field of study in those particular arenas. So once you identify that person, then make sure that that person clicks with you on a personological, emotional, sort of spiritual, existential person-to-person connection. I really believe that to be very, very important. And that sometimes comes as a surprise to folks who know me, because I practice a very rational, emotive, cognitive, behavioral, Alfred Adler, natural logical consequences with some Glasser's reality therapy stuff, which definitely does not emphasize the therapist-patient connection, so to speak, as therapeutic or healing. But contrary to my cognitive, behavioral, and rational emotive counterparts, I really do value the person-therapist relationship very, very highly, and consider it to be a very important aspect of the healing portion, particularly in the early stages of the bonding experience with folks. I would just say find somebody that clicks with your personality style. Obviously, if you have a low tolerance for bad joke givers, I would be in an appropriate choice for you, because my jokes really stink, as most of you who've heard these podcasts already know. Probably much to your chagrin, that my jokes are pretty pitiful. So if you're a person who doesn't like sick humor or stupid jokes or puns, upon my word, ba-doomp, you will probably be very unhappy with me. So, pick somebody who's got a personality style and a quirky interpersonal style that matches yours. And if you're a person that needs it really, really serious and real, somber and straightforward, then find somebody who's like that. And, I tell people when they call on the phone, I am not the therapist for everybody. And that's part of the reason I spend 5 or 10 minutes on the phone talking with the prospective person to see, who I think is going to mesh well with me, and do I have the expertise in the arena that they need? Because a lot of times folks will call me seeking services that I personally don't feel, even though my license says I am and all my certifications say I am, I really don't feel like I'm qualified to work with. And I will refer them to folks who I think are a whole lot better at the stuff that I stink at. And I refer them to those people, and it's really, really a win-win situation. I've talked about that before, but I want to reemphasize that. The other thing I tell people is, if you go in and you meet the person and it seems to click, and you work with them for a couple of sessions, and for whatever reason it's not clicking, don't be embarrassed to go call the next person and trying some other people out. Now, if you do that 3 or 4 times, and what you're really looking for is a yes person to, pat you on the tush and tell you everything's okay and that you're really not that messed up, the rest of the world's just foobard, then you really got to look in the mirror and go, okay, what the hell am I doing here? But if it really doesn't work for you for whatever reason, with the first person, go to the next person on your list. Don't be afraid to do that. And be honest with the therapist you're working with and say, look, you might be really good at what you do. I recognize you're very qualified, but for whatever reason, it's not working for me. And talk to them about it, because it may be something that you folks can work out, and it may not. And if you have a therapist who's pretty mature about his or her stuff, they'll say, I think you're right, or hey, what is it, that you're feeling uncomfortable about? And if it can be worked upon, they will probably work it out with you. And if not, they'll be man or woman enough to say, you're right, and here's a list of the folks you might want to try, or would you like me to help, you find somebody else? And they'll do it very non-defensively. Again, this is not about the therapist being right or you being right per se. This is like chemicals in a test tube. They either, play well together or they don't. And from my perspective, it either works or it doesn't. But that's just one man's perspective, and you are certainly welcome to try out and see what works for you. Some level of discomfort is expected, and I tell people this is not fun. In the early stages, it's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. If your therapist is worth his or her, salt that they're made from, they will confront you. You will feel hurt in some cases. You'll feel embarrassed in some cases. You'll feel insulted in some cases. You'll feel confronted and challenged. That's good. As one of my colleagues said many years ago, growth sucks, and she was right. And what she means is, early in the stage, growth is often painful. And I tell people it's kind of like going to the gym. If you're working those muscles out correctly, they're going to be sore, right? As you strengthen them, they get less sore. They get stronger, and then you up the weight, you test them a little more, they get more sore, and then they get comfortable, and then you push up a little bit. So you're constantly growing, getting stronger, getting better. Therapy is exactly the same process. So expect some level of discomfort. Don't just jump ship because somebody's confronted you. If you're feeling uncomfortable, ask yourself, are you feeling uncomfortable because it's you and you just don't really want to look at your stuff, or is it maybe the way the therapist is delivering it, or maybe the way you're perceiving it, or whatever. But again, you know, try to work it out with that person. If you can't, then don't be ashamed, and it's not a sign of weakness or defeat. It's not a sign that there's something wrong with that therapist or with you. It's just not a good match, you know. It's kind of like, for you musician folks out there, it's sort of like Eric Clapton, you know, trying to play with, you know, somebody that he's not going to mesh well with. And offhand, I can't think of anybody because he's a pretty diverse player. But, you know, it's got to work. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. It's just got to work. It would be like Udo Dirkschneider, the former lead singer for Accept, the band that got famous doing Balls to the Walls, who's had a very successful solo career after that. It would be sort of like him trying to sit in and sing for Fleetwood Mac. Okay, it's probably not going to work. Fleetwood Mac's, you know, does their own thing, and they're good at what they do. Udo Dirkschneider is one of my favorite vocalists for that kind of heavy metal music, and he's really good at what he does. But the two of those guys probably aren't going to play well together, literally. And it doesn't mean because either one of them stinks. It just means their styles are very divergent, right? So it's the same situation with therapy. So once you find somebody and you settle in, the other thing is at some point, if you know, if you're with somebody for a really, really long time, sometimes you'll get stagnant and you'll need to change it up. And sometimes you'll grow as far as that therapist can take you. And you may have to change therapist, you know, a year or two down the road if you're in therapy that long. Again, don't be embarrassed to look at it. It's a process and it's a growth process. And, you know, it's kind of like working with, you know, a ballet dancer teacher, and that teacher's taught you all he or she can teach you. And they say, you know, if you want to learn some other stuff, you may want to go to another ballet instructor to learn a different technique or style or different take on the same thing. Again, it's the same principle. It's not a sign of failure, okay? But let's just assume you've gotten somebody, it's clicking, it's working, you're feeling comfortable, and you're going. You know, expect it to be harder in the early stages. And if you have a multitude of various disorders you're dealing with, or if you're dealing with something that's you've been working with for a really long time, this ain't going to get better in 10 sessions. It's not going to get better in 20 sessions. You're going to be there for the long haul. Some of the folks who see me 2 and 3 times a week in the early stages to get a jump start on the process. Once they get going, they can cut it back to once a week, once every other week. And in some cases, they do, you know, after however long it takes them, they're doing check-ins with me about once every 3 months, you know. So it varies. I mean, there is no hard and fast rule. You know, a lot of times people will call and say, well, how long is this going to take me? You know, and without some form of seeing the person in person and talking with them and doing some baseline psychological assessment on them, I have no flipping way, because I'm real good, but I'm not God. That extra O in that word's like really important, okay? So, you know, once I assess them, I can say, well, you know, I can tell you that it's going to take somewhere between this long and this long, and part of that really depends on you and how much of that nasty four-letter word work you do. And yeah, I'm going to say it again. I know you guys are probably sick of it, but, you know, it's reality. You know, you don't get better without working. You don't get muscles that are toned if you're sitting there eating Cheetos and drinking bad beer and watching, you know, soap opera reruns. It ain't going to happen. You got to get in the gym. You got to get in the gym on a regular basis, and you got to push yourself. It's just, you know, it's the rules of nature, not my rules, right? Same thing with therapy. So work it. Do not expect your therapist to do the work for you. If he or she's a good therapist, they are very much like a teacher. Like a karate sensei. They are not going to do the work for you. They're going to guide you in the direction. They're going to support you. They're going to kick you in the tush occasionally. They're going to compliment you occasionally. They're going to give you homework to do if they're a really competent therapist. You need to do your frickin' homework, okay? You can't get better 1 hour or 2 hours or 3 hours a week. If you go every frickin' day, you can't get better. It's 1 hour out of, you know, 24 hours in a day. You got all the rest of those hours to muck up, okay? So if you're going to learn something, it's like learning a new skill. You got to practice it. The more you practice it, the better at it you'll get, the quicker at it you'll get, and the less time you'll spend giving somebody money teaching you how to get your life together. So it really depends on the person a lot, and I tell that to everybody that walks in the door. How long this takes you really depends on how long you've had this problem, how many, you know, combating problems you're working on simultaneously, how severe the problems have become, and how much you're willing to do that nasty four-letter word work, and how, you know, hard are you willing to do it on a consistent basis. It takes work, work, work. So if you're feeling you know, scared in the early stages, if you're feeling overworked, if you're feeling underappreciated and underloved in the early stages of therapy, and when I say early stages, I mean anywhere from 3 months to 2 years, again, depending on how bad your problem is, you know, unless you're one of these lucky folks, you're going to be working at this thing a while. And if it feels good the first couple of months, you're in a honeymoon phase. It won't feel good very long. And so it's going to hurt. You should be hurting. If you're not hurting, you're not growing. You should be feeling uncomfortable, okay? Obviously, I don't mean that in a physical sense. Your therapist shouldn't be beating you over the head with a rubber stick or something, but you should be feeling emotionally and cognitively challenged, okay? Do your homework. That's the biggest thing I can say to you. If there's one take-home lesson in this podcast, it's do your flipping homework. Do it every frickin' time. Don't wait for your therapist to do your homework for you. Don't wait till you get to the therapy office to do your homework. Don't wait till the 30 minutes before your therapy appointment to try to cram in your homework like some cramming for an exam, okay? It doesn't work. Masked practice is not good. Spaced practice, spacing it out, is good. In fact, we already know from most of the research that spaced practice is a good thing regardless of what you're trying to learn, whether it's piano, karate, algebra, meditation, dieting, it doesn't matter. Okay, practice, 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 along and along and along. Much, much better than trying to cram it all in at one time. You're going to retain it for longer periods of time. The change is going to be slower. It's going to stick better with you, very much like trying to lose weight. All right, if you want to lose weight all at one time, and doing a crash diet, it's not only bad for your body, but the chances of your body coming back and bitch smacking you later is pretty freaking high, okay? So better to lose the weight slowly and keep it off more permanently, okay? So biggest lesson, take-home lesson to this podcast, if you don't want to listen to anything else, is do your flipping homework. Make sure the therapist is giving you and challenging you homework. If the therapist is not doing that, ask him or her nicely why it is they're not doing that. Do they feel like you don't need it? Do they feel like you don't have the kind of disorder or disorders or problem or problems that require homework? Because if you have one of those problems, you probably don't need to be in therapy. I have never, and I mean never, seen a person who doesn't need some level of homework. Ever, never, ever, ever, right? Except the person who doesn't need treatment. If they come in to get assessed to see if anything's wrong, and I go, you know, take 2 Thorazine and call me in the morning kind of thing. And, you know, don't come back. You're too healthy to see me kind of thing. And I have said that to people before. You know, sometimes people make mistakes. You know, we all make mistakes, okay? And sometimes people just muck up. You know, they drink and drive. They do something stupid. They cheat on an algebra exam, whatever. And they're just being dumb in the moment. They're being human. Okay, and sometimes people make mistakes and they don't need treatment. And if that's the case and you've got an honest therapist, he or she'll tell you that. Right? They'll tell you, look, you know, if you want to see me, here's the story, but you really don't need it. And here's some things you can do if you want to try to look at this. And I've said that to people. I haven't said it to a lot of people, but I have had people in the past who've seen me once or twice and been gone and been fine. Okay. But you need to do your work. If you're the average person who needs, you know, more intensive kinds of treatment, you're going to need somebody who does work. Make sure that your therapist recommends some kind of books, articles, you know, chapters in books, something for you to do at home. Homework is very important. Sometimes it's, for me, sometimes it's reading books. Sometimes it's selected chapters in books. Sometimes it's handouts I give folks to do. Sometimes it's real-time practicing. So, you know, like somebody has phobias or something of that nature is going to need to practice that in the real time. Sometimes that's going to require me going out and doing guided practice with them in real time, in live, on the baseball field, for example, or in the airport if they have a fear of flying or whatever. So a lot of times it's going to require me accompanying them, you know, to their site to get better. Sometimes, you know, it's going to be requiring me giving them homework and them honestly reporting on the homework, giving them exercises to do, and then having them come in and share their exercises with me. If you do exercises at home as part of your homework, be honest. This is not about getting the answers right or wrong. This is the place for you to make mistakes. Your therapy office is your training ground. It's the place for you to say stupid and ugly and inappropriate and socially not too cool things. It's the place for you to make mistakes. It's the place for you to get emotionally upset and cry and say things to your therapist you probably didn't mean and then come back and apologize or whatever, okay? This is your training ground. It is not a place for you to look good. If you're a person that needs to look good in front of people, this is a good place for you to get over it. This is a good place for you to experiment. Look at this as a social interpersonal training ground, right? Because this is about you in a trusting, honest, open, transparent relationship with another person. And if your therapist is worth his or her salt, he or she's going to talk about his own struggles if they relate to stuff that you're doing. He or she, if they're really got their cookies together, they're going to talk about how they fucked up the dough the first couple of times and what they did and the mistakes they made, and here's what you don't want to do. And I do that a lot with my folks. I use my muck-ups as examples of what not to do with folks on some occasion, right? I don't just say, well, I've never done that. And I, you know, well, that's real nice, dude, but, you know, how's that going to help me, okay? You need to give me some ideas on how not to do it. I mean, you know, one of the things I get razzed at with a lot of my addicts is that I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs. That's not true. I drink on rare occasions. I don't do drugs, what most people, I consider alcohol a drug. It is a drug. So is sugar. You know, and as I've said to many people and preached many times, anything that you put in your mouth is a drug that gets chemically decomposed into your body. So food, water, sugar, you know, steak, chicken, you know, broccoli, they're all drugs from a pharmacological standpoint. What we're really talking about is healthy drugs versus unhealthy drugs. I've almost never done unhealthy drugs. Alcohol is not really a healthy drug unless you're in pain and you're trying to knock the pain out because you're in the middle of the desert and you don't have some anesthetic and you got to reset your leg that you broke sitting in a gopher hole or something, right? But I do drink alcohol on rare occasions. I've never been drunk. I don't do anything other than alcohol and occasional caffeine and an occasional theophylline. And for those of you who don't know, theophylline is the psychoactive xanthine in tea. It's tea doesn't really have caffeine. It has theophylline, which is sort of a cousin of caffeine. It's a stimulant, a kind of wimpy stimulant, but it is a stimulant. And I have done teas with theophylline in them, but I typically do de-theophylinated, which is typically known in the common world as decaffeinated, but it's not really caffeine. And Mr. OCPD can't call it decaffeinated because it's not caffeine in it. So I call it de-theophylinated, which is the correct term, but at any rate. So I occasionally do tea and coffee that has, you know, caffeine or caffeine derivative in it. I do alcohol on rare occasions. I have smoked a pipe on rare occasions. I have smoked cigars on rare occasions, but I don't smoke on a regular basis. I've never done anything other than that. Never done any psychoactive drugs like, you know, pot or, you know, anything else. I don't do illicit stuff. I don't abuse, you know, prescription drugs. But yet I got into this business working with addicts in 1983, right? And so I get razzed a lot by these guys and gals going, how can you do this? You've never been drunk and na-na-na-na-na. Well, you know what? It's just a bad habit. It's a habit that somebody does to escape and avoid something or to change their mind state. And I've been in places where I've wanted to change my mind state and wanted to escape and avoid stuff, so I know what that feels like. I know what anger feels like. I know what despair feels like. I know what righteous indignation feels like. I know what despair and, you know, brief stints of suicidal ideation feel like and what despair and loneliness feel like. I also know what joy and ecstasy feel like and what these, you know, Zen moments feel, these peak experiences feel like. So I know what all that stuff feels like, and these are all common emotions. You don't have to be in a specific situation to feel a generic emotion. Now, do I know exactly how my patient feels? Well, no. And you know what? Nobody does. Even if you've undergone the same situation, I defy anybody to say they know exactly how somebody feels because they don't. Because to know how somebody feels, you got to go inside their skin and feel it. And I don't know anybody who has that ability that's mortal on earth. Now, I kind of know how they feel because I know what despair feels like with me. I know what depression feels like with me. I know what anxiety feels like and stage fright feels like. But it's experienced differently by everybody. So I want to know what it feels like by that person describing it to me in as, you know, much detail as possible. And then I can say, oh, you know what? I've had similar experiences. Here's what happened to me. Here's what I did that helped me. Here's how this might help you. Here's some exercises you can do to get over it, right? But in order to get over this kind of stuff, again, you need to practice it, which means you need to do your homework. You know, it's that nasty word work again. You know, I often, a variety of reading assignments and practical, you know, live homework assignments for folks to do and get them to report on it. I get them to bring sheets that I have on workout. I have a what I call a thinking sheet that talks about thinkings and thinkings, how they think and feel, feelings and thoughts. Sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied here trying to talk too fast. And it's called a responsible worksheet, which is based largely on Ellis and Beck and Meichenbaum's work, with a little Glasser and Adler thrown in. And so it's worksheets that I give people, and I have specific worksheets on specific situations like using substances or anger acting out or suicidal thoughts or actions or whatever. But I have a generic one about just inappropriate feeling out of sorts, or, you know, like you want to, you know, hit somebody or scream or whatever. And I have people, you know, do those things and bring them in and talk about where they had what I call the computer brain farts, where their, you know, programming in their head caused them to feel a certain way that caused them to want to do something, or caused them in some instances to do things that they're later regretting or that got them into trouble. So we do problem solving stuff a lot. I can't do problem solving if somebody's lying to me. So make sure that you are being totally honest with your therapist, whomever he or she is. And make sure that when you do that, they're not castigating you for it, but they're saying, okay, well, you and I both know that was not the right thing to do. Or, you know, you and I both know that was dumb, but, you know, show me a person who hasn't done a dumb thing and I'll show you God. And that's one of the most common things I say to people. Everybody makes mistakes. I make them every flipping day in one form or another, right? Sometimes I just make them in my head. Sometimes I make them in real time. Sometimes they're really big mistakes. Sometimes they're really minute mistakes. But it doesn't matter, because to me, they're the biggest mistakes on the planet. And that's true of everybody. Everybody's stuff is the most hurtful, dramatic, painful, awful, terrible, frightening, catastrophe thing on the planet for them. It's the worst thing for them. And do I know how they feel? No. Do I kind of have a sense of what they're going through? Yeah, but I don't know how they feel exactly, and nobody can. But if they can describe it enough for me, if they can bring in their homework sheets and I can see where they're making their thought pattern mistakes and their emotional reasoning mistakes and their action mistakes, I can help them short-circuit that the next time. And maybe I can give them some practice doing it in real time. So I do role-playing with folks. Sometimes I have them process song lyrics, because that's something that I know really, really well, being a musician since long before I was a therapy person. You know, so I bring whatever works. Sometimes I'll bring movie clips and talk about scenes in movies and analyze what other people do. Sometimes it's too touchy for folks to work on, so I have to do a third-party person. So I have them analyze, you know, character passages in plays or movies or books or poems or whatever. But I need them to do the work. I need them to be honest about it. So the biggest thing I can tell you is be cooperative. Therapy is a cooperative venture. You have to do the work. The therapist is driving the car and telling you which direction they're going in, but you have to talk about the sights that you're seeing and how you're interpreting the sights and where you're having a problem seeing the sights or experiencing the roller coaster ride in Disney World or whatever your thing is. It's really, really important. And if something comes up and your therapist has an agenda to talk about, and you have an agenda and you feel like you really need to talk about it, you know what? Your agenda trumps my agenda. So if you're coming in and something's happened that I don't know about, or something's happening that you feel like you really need to talk about, interrupt the therapist. I tell people, listen, here's my plans for you, but if something comes up in the meantime, you know, kind of like the old John Lennon quote, life is what happens when you're busy making plans doing something else. Well, therapy sometimes is what happens when the therapist is busy making plans for his or her patient or client, and the patient or client comes in and says, wait a minute, excuse me, I have some stuff I need to talk about, like, now. So occasionally somebody will come in and they'll have something that they need to talk about. And it doesn't really matter whether I think it's more important or not. If it's important to them, it's probably important, and I probably need to shut the heck up and listen to them. I can always say afterwards, well, okay, I hear you. I don't really get what the big deal is, but I hear that it's a big deal for you, and so I'm going to treat it like a big deal. Or, you know, I wanted to be honor it by treating it seriously, because it's your issue and I hear it's important for you, and thanks for bringing it up. And I always thank people for bringing stuff up. Now, if they're bringing stuff up to avert the issue because they're trying to escape and avoid the fact they didn't do their homework, that's a different story, right? So don't do that. Come in, be a quote-unquote good patient. Come in and do your stuff, right? If you don't understand, say you don't understand. Therapists aren't always the greatest explainers in the world. You know, sometimes I think I've done a great job, and I've done a miserably crappy job of telling somebody what I want. Makes sense to me, but it doesn't make sense to them. And if it doesn't make sense to you, ask your therapist to say it again. Ask your therapist to say it 14 times if you have to. Get your therapist to use cue cards, you know, hand signals, whatever, right? Because sometimes we think we're being clear, but we're not. We're not being clear to the other person in a way that he or she can understand us. So if your therapist says something you don't get, you don't understand, don't just shake your head and go, okay, you know, confront them. What the heck, what do you mean by that? Remember, confrontation just means facing the problem. It doesn't mean being an asshole. It doesn't mean being mean or rude or crude or uncouth or socially unacceptable. It just means saying what you mean, meaning what you say in a way that somebody can hear you. Confront the issue. Talk about it. If you feel like you're being put down by your therapist, bring it up. Say, you know, sometimes when I leave here, I feel like I'm being fussed at or being, you know, chided or whatever. And if your therapist is really good at hearing that, he or she'll say, okay, what do I do that you interpret that way? Because if I'm doing that, that's not my goal. Now, you know, if the person says, well, you know, a lot of times it seems like you fuss at me for me not doing my homework. And, you know, and I've had people say that to me before. And I say, well, are you doing the work you need to do? No. Okay, well, how can I call you on that without you feeling like I'm fussing at you? Because the reality is, my job is to call you on it. If I'm letting you get away with stuff, you're paying me for not doing my job, and that's not kosher. I can't do my job well if I'm not doing my job. And if I never not do my job. Well, that's not true. I'll probably screw up. But I never intentionally not do my job, let's say that. So if I'm not confronting you on your stuff when I see stuff that needs to be confronted, I'm not doing my job. And if I'm placating you and patting you on the back and going, oh, yeah, that's really sweet. It's really your parents' fault. No, it's really your kids' fault. No, it's God's fault. No, it's society's fault. No, it's the president's fault. You know, unless it really is God or society or the president's fault, I don't need to be saying that shit to you. I need for you to be owning your own stuff. Because if you don't own it, you can't change it. You can't work on it. Or you can't decide, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway and screw you if you don't like it. And I've had people say that to me before. They're usually nicer than that. But, you know, a lot of times people will say, I don't have any intention of quitting using drugs. And I had somebody say that to me not too long ago, actually. I work with groups of addicts in various settings outside of my office. And sometimes I'm working with groups and they'll say, you know, Dr. M, no offense. And sometimes they're not even nice. I say, you know, I'm going to use drugs regardless of what you tell me. I had a group of kids tell me that a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to use drugs when I get out of here. And my response to them is really simple. You know what? It's your life. You have a right to live it any way you want. But while you're in here, my job is to teach you the difference. My job is to teach you about the dangers of drugs. And if you make a decision to use drugs in spite of the fact that I told you and proved to you that drugs were bad, okay, then you know what? You have to make your mistakes. It's your life. And if I think I can run your life, then I'm either delusional or a narcissist or dumber than dog poop. Okay? That's not my job. My job is to educate you, and then it's your job to make choices. But choices have consequences, natural and logical consequences. And I tell every one of my patients, if you're not willing to modify your behavior, then you choose the natural consequences of your behavior, period. Right? No excuses, no ifs, ands, or buts. Right? And that's the problem that a lot of people have. They think they can keep doing the same shit they're doing and get a different result. And that's probably not going to happen unless they're just uber lucky. Right? It almost never happens. So it's my job to tell people what the reality is. It's their job to decide to change or not. But if they don't decide to change, then it's my job to decide, am I being helpful enough to warrant them paying me the bucks I'm making to continue the therapeutic relationship? And if it's not, then it's my responsibility to fire myself. And I tell people that. And I have fired myself before. I don't fire the patient because you know what? That's not kosher. I don't fire patients. I fire me because I'm not doing whatever I need to do to help them. Now, you may say, well, shit, they're not cooperating with you. Yeah, that's true. But if I'm not helping them, then I need to remove myself from the situation because sometimes people will continue to use me and to pay me just to placate them or to pretend like they're doing therapy. And that's not my job. That's not my job as I see it. My job is to confront and to educate and to try to convince people that what they're doing is not going to get them where I think they want to go. Okay? And if they're not listening to me and they're not doing what I say at some level or listening to my advice, then it's my job to remove myself. Now, if I'm getting paid by, you know, a hospital or a school to do a group therapy like I am in some cases, then, you know, I'll tell the dean or the director of the hospital, you know what? These people aren't listening to me. So, you know, if you want to pay me, that's fine. But here's my concerns. Here's what I feel like needs to happen. Here's what's not happening. You want to keep paying me, I'll be glad to take your money. But here's my perception of what's going on. And then if they want to hire me, that's great. And I'll tell patients that. And sometimes I've said, you know, I don't really feel like I'm being helpful to you. And patients will say to me, are you freaking crazy? Are you nuts? What? Right? And I'll go, okay, well, help me out here because I don't see it. And sometimes they'll go, dumbass, look. Right? And they'll educate me and I'll go, oh, yeah. Okay. Never mind. Emily Lutella, right? Endangered feces. Okay, I get it. And sometimes they'll say, I was kind of thinking that myself. And I'll say, okay, well, what can I do to change that? Or do you feel like you're at a place that we need to, take a break for a while? Or you need to, take a hiatus from therapy or whatever. And, we talk about it. Good therapists will discuss that kind of stuff with their people. They don't hide their head in the sand like an ostrich and do escape avoidance. That's not cool, because we have to be able to face our own shit too. That's not cool. We're role models, whether we wanted to be or not. Okay? And I mean, that's the reality of it. So if you're with your therapist and he or she's not doing what you feel like they need to do, confront them about it. Do it nicely, but confront them. If you feel like you're not benefiting, confront them. Be specific as to why you're not benefiting. If you are benefiting, tell them that. Sometimes that's really nice to hear, because most of the time we don't hear that. I almost never get complimented by people, even if I think I've done a really good job. And so as a therapist, you have to do a lot of self-stroking. And I don't mean that in the way that Beavis and Butthead, when Butthead goes, Beavis is a self-stroker. we're not talking that kind of stroking, okay? We're talking the kind of strokes that the song used to say, the stroke, That was not about sex. That was about patting yourself on the back, okay? Those kind of strokes, like in transactional analysis, self-stroking, okay? So, you're patting yourself on the back. So you have to learn to do that a lot as a therapist, because patients don't usually give you that. And you don't need to expect that from them, honestly. You need to do what you feel like your best job is, and then do check-ins with your patient occasionally and give them permission to give you feedback, right? When somebody leaves counseling, a lot of times I'll ask them, what do you think I could have done differently? What do you think I could have done better? What did you do that you just really hated? What did I do that you really liked, that you thought would be more helpful, that I need to do less of, more of, whatever? Because if I don't get some kind of feedback from them, if I'm foobarring, and if they're not honest with me, I'm not growing. And you know what? It's my job to grow too. I haven't arrived by any stretch of the imagination. I don't care how many plaques of crap I have on the wall. Growth is lifelong. Work is never ending. Yeah, there's that four-letter word work again, right? Even for me, right? So I'm growing, and I expect people to grow. But to do that, you have to cooperate with your therapist. You have to be honest with him or her. You have to do your work honestly. Bring your work in and talk about it honestly. Talk about the problems you're having. Be an active, cooperative participant in your life. Because remember, this is about you and your life. This isn't about waiting for somebody like me to fix your life. Because reality is, I can't fix you. I'm not God. I'm an overpaid, uber-educated teacher, life coach, educator, cheerleader, whatever, although I look crappy with pom-poms and, a skirt, let me tell you. I look really bad, okay? So I don't wear those very often. Oops, did I say that? Oh, I'm not in the therapy office anyway. unless I'm going to a Scottish event, then I may wear a kilt, but that's about as close to a skirt as you'll see me. So, in summary, be an active participant. Be a cooperative participant. Be honest. If you're having trouble doing something, ask for clarification. If you don't understand, ask for clarification. If you're scared, admit you're scared. Ask your therapist for ideas on how not to be scared. Ask your therapist if you really feel like your therapist needs to accompany you in real time. Ask them, do they do live stuff? Do they do real-time stuff? A lot of your therapists who deal with certain kinds of stuff, particularly like phobias, anxiety stuff, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder stuff, will often do live work with folks. If they do sport-related psychology work, they have to. You can't do sports psychology sitting on your butt having somebody describe video images in their head of them playing tennis. You got to see what they're doing on the court, or see how the wrestler is getting pissed off and throwing the wrestling match or whatever. You got to see that live, right? There's no substitute for that stuff, right? So ask your therapist to come to your stuff. If you do that, know that most therapists get paid time and a half if they do live stuff. Be generous about paying them. Don't be a putz about it. Don't bitch and moan and scream and yell. And if you're using some kind of insurance, most insurance companies don't pay for out-of-office visits. Pony up the money. This is your life. You are making investments in your life. You're not making investments in my bank account, even though that's essentially what you're doing. What you're really doing is making investments in your life. And I tell people the same thing about foods when they bitch about, oh, those organic foods cost more money, or oh, those foods with natural ingredients cost more money. Yeah, they do. But you know what? You can pay up front now, or you can pay up down the road when you're hooked up to a heart-lung machine, or when you're, you know, hooked up to a respirator, you know, with a portable oxygen thingy, or you're in a wheelchair, or you're paying for cancer treatment or stroke treatment or whatever. You know, better to pony up the money now than to pony up the money in one way or another later, right? It hurts a lot worse later. And surgery is a lot more painful, and chemo is a lot more painful. Put those freaking cigarettes away now, okay? Yeah, you'll thank me later. So if you're going to ask your therapist to do something out of office, to come, you know, manage a conflict you're having with parents or spouse at the house, be man or woman enough to offer to pay them what they're asking. Don't be a chigunya. Oh, sorry, that's Greek. I know that's Greek to you, right? Boom. Sorry. that really is Greek. It means like tin can tightwad. There's not a really good translation for that. But it's somebody who's like stupidly, you know, tight with their money, you know, like me. Oops, did I say that? Sad but true. So be, you know, be generous about it. But if you need them, ask them. Ask them if they'll do it. Even if there's somebody who doesn't normally do it, ask them, do they do that? Ask them, will they do it in your case? Right? And if they say no, ask them, do they know some life coach or somebody else that they could recommend to go do it? Right? Sometimes you need more than one person treating you. Sometimes you're dealing with emotional issues and you have an addiction and your therapist doesn't work with addictions, and your therapist may say, hey, I need you to work with an addictions counselor. Now, I have both certifications, so I do therapy and addictions work, you know, but I'm compulsive, and we all know that by now, so of course I do, right? So I'm kind of a one-stop shopper, but there are things that I clearly don't do, right? Like if I'm working with a family, you know, if I'm working with one family member, let's say I'm working with a couple's having problems, and the husband and wife both need counseling, I don't work with both of them. I either work with them as a couple, or I work with the husband, or I work with the wife, because it gets too funky if I try to split it. And even though I might be able to keep it separate if I'm working with the husband and wife separately, in their minds at some point they're probably going, I wonder what he's telling my wife, I wonder what he's telling my boyfriend, or what if he's telling whatever. You don't need that. You know, make it easy on yourself, as Dionne Warwick used to say, you know, or as I like to call it, make it sleazy on yourself. You know, split yourself up, and a lot of times that requires you referring out to another therapist or another therapist referring out to you for, you know, cooperative treatment. If that's the case, make sure your therapists are talking. Make sure that you're signing releases for your therapist to talk, right? If you came in because of something going on at school or something going on with the court system, be sure that you sign releases for them to talk to people. Don't be stupid. Don't try to hide stuff. This is not a place to hide shit. This is a place to be forward about your stuff. Your therapist can't help you if the therapist doesn't have information. We are all dumbass data machines, and if you feed us the wrong data, garbage in, garbage out. Just like a computer, okay? Be honest, be cooperative, do your work, and if and when it's not working, change therapists, be honest and upfront about it. If you need more than one therapist because you have a kind of problems that require that, make sure that both therapists are talking. Make sure that they're talking to each other. If you have a parole or probation officer, make sure the PO is talking with your therapist and your therapist talking with your PO. Right, that's kind of hard to do because a lot of people aren't that great about returning phone calls. And I'm not slamming POs or anybody, because that's true of other therapists as well. So I'm usually on their case like stink on a Jude bug if they're not, and usually complaining to their supervisors if they don't call me back in a day or two. Oops, did I say that? But you need somebody who's going to advocate for you. If you're doing court-related stuff, make sure the therapist you're seeing or the court-related evaluator you're seeing is going to advocate for you, is going to go to court. Ask them that when you call them on the phone. If it's a forensic issue and you need them to evaluate and testify for you in court, make damn sure they're willing to do that. They'll testify in court. If they won't, call somebody else. Your best bet is to do as much legwork up front. I've talked to this about this topic before when I talked about looking for therapists. Make sure that you have an understanding of what you and your therapist's responsibilities are and that each of you is willing to do the work. I can't emphasize that enough. Okay? Take responsibility for your stuff. Make a good investment in your life and make good use of your money. You're paying money for this stuff, or your insurance company is paying money for it, and you're paying insurance premiums for it. Use it. Use it wisely. Okay, make as much of your time and put as much effort into it as you need to put into change. Because the more effort you put in up front, the less time you're going to be in talking with jerks like me, and the less money you're going to be spending in the long run, and the more you're going to be benefiting yourself. The quicker your problem's going to be fixed, and the happier you're going to be, and everybody's going to be happy. And I tell most people, I do my best job when I kick your butt out of the office as quickly as possible without abandoning you before you need to be abandoned, so to speak. Okay? So do your work, do your screening beforehand, make sure you have an understanding when you go in, make sure that your therapist is working. If it's not working for you, change therapists as soon as you can, but make sure that you're changing because it's not working, not because you're not working or because you don't want to face your stuff, right? If you have a therapist that placates you too much, you're not paying a yes man or a yes woman. You're paying somebody to tell you the truth, okay? And I know it feels good for people to placate you and wipe your tush and pat you on the back and say, poor baby, but they're really not doing you a favor. They're really, really not. Okay, so hope that helps. We'll be back again. I don't know quite what I'm going to do on the next podcast, but if any of you have ideas or things that you'd like for me to talk about, please feel free and pony up to the website. Also, the first of the year, my interactive dillies will be ready to boogie, and I will be able to do long-distance consultations with folks. So any of you who want to do a consultation with me will be able to do so, whether you live in Alaska or where. I don't know about Alaska. Yeah, I know. Shut up and end the podcast, right? Or wherever. So thank you for listening. Hope you guys are having a great holiday. If you have any questions or any concerns or things you want to talk about, put them up. I'm ready to boogie. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Be well.